Jeff.
AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Jeff Stein's our national and presidential expert. He's also a noted author. You can find his books over at Next Chapter Books, as well as TotallyIowa.com. And, of course, the Iowa Business Report, daily show he does down there. Excellent. The Iowa Politics Report as well. He's kind enough to join us from KXEL, Cedar Falls, Waterloo. Hey, Jeff.
Matthew, I just so love that music. That's my walk-up music.
That is.
I want that played before I go into any room.
I'm surprised. Do you have that at your station now?
Yes, I absolutely do. You sent it to me, or rather, you had your people send it to me. You can't be bothered with such pedestrian tasks, but you had your people send it to me.
Oh, yeah, because that's me. let me ask you this. Do the Iowans think you're pretentious when you play that on your show?
They already know what an arrogant, pretentious sort I am. I mean, the music isn't going to change anybody's opinion one way or another. I mean, that dog hunted long ago.
Oh, of course Jeff is playing that music. That's really what the response is.
They've rolled their eyes so much over the course of time, nothing surprises them. So, you know.
Let's get into it. How surprised were you at the margin here? I mean, this is the last update from the New York Times, 64% for and reminder, we got to make sure we phrase this correctly. The first question was, should Gavin Newsom be removed as the governor of California? Basically a job approval question. 64% said no, that he should stay as governor. 36% said yes, he should be removed, with 77% of districts in right now. And really, at that point, anything after that becomes moot. So, you know, were you surprised at the margin on that?
Not ultimately, and it's because of the strategy that he wound up employing, okay? And this was a very savvy political move by Gavin Newsom, not his first day, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you look at the voter registration numbers in California, 46% of registered voters are Democrats, 24% are Republicans, 23% do not have a party affiliation. So what that means is you have to get all the registered Republicans and all the registered non-affiliated voters together as a single block to just barely have more of a voting pool than there are Democrats. All right? That means there's 5 million more registered Democrats than Republicans. So the deck, in essence, lays out that way going into it. But if you remember when this whole thing started, they did not have a problem getting enough signatures to have this question brought to the ballot because Newsom's job approval rating in polls was very low. And because, Matt, and this to me is the fundamental point, if the question is simply, should you get rid of Gavin Newsom, if that's all that people focused on and not the other half of it, I think you would have had a much closer vote, maybe even 55% to 45%. But this is where, and he'd still stay in office, but it'd be much, much closer. This is where, in the abstract, you say, should we get rid of this guy? Yeah, he's a putz. He goes to dinner without a mask. Get rid of him. But then when you get to brass tacks of, okay, now that you've gotten rid.
Do we lose him?
Yeah, let's see if we can get him back.
Oh, okay. That's not good. So hopefully we get him back here pretty quick. Because what Jeff's point is what he was getting at is that because the other candidates there were not as strong on what the replacement candidate would be, question number two, that helped Newsom quite a bit because quite literally that, you know, 64% were saying, you know, I might not like Gavin Newsom, but at the same time, I'd rather have him than the other guys. Jeff, we have him back yet? Yep, good.
I think he might have missed just what you said at the end there.
Well, Jeff.
I never left. You got to stop going to Radio Shack closeout sales for your equipment.
Sure thing, Iowa Radio. I've been in your radio stations 3 times. Okay, bubblegum and prayers. All right.
Okay, I'll go back to the point where you started cutting in because you couldn't hear me anymore. Okay.
Yeah.
Once you had an actual opponent. So, for example, Larry Elder all of a sudden became the leading non-Newsom. It would have been the same if it was Caitlyn Jenner. It would have been the same if it was the guy who used to be mayor of San Diego. Once you actually get an opponent, then you have people who say, oh, yeah, let's get rid of Newsom. Oh, wait, we get him?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, now I'm changing my mind. If Larry Elder had run a California race, he might have done better. But he made it a national race. He was on every national talk show. He then said, you know, if Dianne Feinstein leaves office, I'm going to appoint a Republican to replace her. Oh, goodness sakes. All you've done is just hand Gavin Newsom what he needs. And so it then became Gavin Newsom not running on his record, but instead saying, you want a Donald Trump wannabe running our state?
Well, and you bring up Trump. I mean, he did fall into that trap. Schwarzenegger, when he ran against to fill in for Gray, you know, he did a really good job of staying away from that national level. And he, you know, and because similar to a point when Al Franken was running here for the first time for his Senate seat, he said, I'm going to break the mold. I am concerned about this state. And Schwarzenegger was able to basically win that because he did exactly do that. I think this idea and Elder, whether or not he willingly played into that or he was just a dupe, the fact is too many people tried to turn this into a referendum for Trump. And that was just not going to fly, especially in a state like California.
Here's some numbers that make your point. Arnold Schwarzenegger had a 50% favorability rating back in 2003 when he won. Larry Elder's favorability rating was 34%. Okay, so you have Arnold, who's just kind of his own island, with a 50% favorable rating. You then have Larry Elder, who starts talking about all these national things with a much lower favorability rating. So no, not a surprise. Once the race became Newsom versus someone else, you can't have a recall election where you throw somebody out of office one day and then a month later have an election to replace them. That just doesn't work. But I think if you would have had a separation, you might have had a little different issue. I still think, given the voter registration levels, all you have to do, you know, is just kind of swing the rope in the air and say, okay, Democrats, come on around. And with that voter registration advantage, you know, when's the next time a Republican's going to win in that state?
The Republicans, one of the paths that they have, and this is on a national level, they have definitely targeted Latino voters to try mm-hmm. to get them into their base. And they have had some success with it, especially in the realm of appealing to religious Latino voters through specifically, a lot of the Catholic faith. And they've actually been able to bring some Latino voters in. But yes. When you're looking at the numbers, New York Times also have brought out the point that the Latino voters definitely went with Gavin Newsom or to keep Gavin Newsom in office, which was once again, this is kind of this trend. They're hoping. Republicans keep hoping that they can finally figure out some way to get Latino voters firmly into their camp because that would be a counter base, which they think to the Democrats, especially in future elections as the demographics of this country changes. But the reality is that they still have yet to figure out a way to seal the deal with Latino voters.
I've got some numbers on exit polls. It shows that 58% of Hispanics as a voting bloc, 58% voted to retain Newsom. The projection had been it would be 68%. And so the thinnest little layer of silver lining that Republicans have is to say, well, you know, Gavin Newsom did not dominate Hispanics to the level that had been anticipated. So that means, you know, hey, good on us. Well, when you consider the fact that 64% of the citizens who voted to keep him, and that voting bloc was only at 58%, that's statistically insignificant when you're talking about a state of that many people. So, yeah, the Republicans have been putting the strategy there. Yes, it seems to have paid off better than had been projected, but still, when you're only getting 42% of a voting block that's that large, where's the path to victory with that?
I got into it once with the Senate Majority Leader, Paul Gazelka. For some reason, he decided to comment on one of my Facebook posts, and he came back and he said, oh, we're doing so much better with Latino voters. I went and looked at the numbers. You're at 60-40. And granted, yes, that is dramatically up from when it was 80-20. But you still have a little bit of a math problem there before you can claim them as a solid, a dependable voting block for Republicans. And I think that they have made inroads. But the reality is that they've whether that's the border wall stuff, whether it is it's the way immigrants are treated in this country. You've seen them go after farm workers in this country. You know, they have the Republicans' problem is that they've got a real bipolar message when it comes to Latino voters, Hispanic voters. And I think that, yes, they definitely have brought those numbers up. But I don't know how much further they really can take them, because the reality is unless they can dramatically change their party's platform, and I mean dramatically change it, I don't think that they're going to get any much better than this.
Well, and that's an excellent point. And the reason why the Republicans have been able to make some inroads is in large part because many Democrats have taken that voting block for granted. So it is incumbent upon Democrats. I mean, if you're looking at these numbers and you say, we got 58% of Hispanics, that's great. It's only 58% based on the historic numbers. So what are Democrats not doing to get their message across to that voting bloc? Mm-hmm. Now, we mentioned something about favorability ratings, and we all know that the latest AM950 poll shows that Matt McNeil has 100% favorability. But again, that's on an island over here.
Even my mom doesn't like me. So
she doesn't listen, and therefore she doesn't vote. So
that's good.
But Here's the number that showed you everything you needed to know. We talked about Schwarzenegger's favorability as opposed to Elder's, and there was a big difference.
Yeah.
Newsom's approval rating overall, Matt, was 55% going in. 55. Gray Davis's was 26.
Yeah.
Okay, so again, I was a little put out last night in hearing Newsom's victory remarks. Yes, he outperformed his approval rating. Yes, he stayed in office. But he then started to talk about why it was a referendum on every good thing that he had done. He's the one, properly, in the month before the election, made it all about Larry Elder being a bad person. He wasn't running on his record. And so I think he needs to be a little careful. I get it. I get the spirit of the moment. Yeah. I get the fact that he wants to build momentum because he's got to run for re-election now in 14 months. But to, in essence, come in and say, hey, look, I was retained. That means you love what I'm doing. That's sort of like a guy being born on third base and saying, oh, look at me. I hit a triple.
Well, and he went after, he scared a lot of California Democrats in early August when he was out there saying that this is dead, a dead heat at this point. And mm-hmm. I think that that was kind of part of his messaging. But once again, just you're a smart political guy. Do you try to recall a person whose favorability rating is 55%? Because that should just tell you right now that unless you've got a real stellar candidate that can pull away 5% of that vote, which they did not have anywhere on that ballot, it almost baffles the mind that even 51% would be a pretty hard hurdle to cross, but 55, you're like, that was just a dumb idea.
Well, now that's 55% approval in exit polls yesterday.
Okay.
It was lower when they really started to gin this up. But here's again why, Gavin wins. That's great for him. He had a 55% approval rating in the exit polls, but 64% voted for him. In other words, you've got 9% of people who voted for him don't approve of him. Okay, so there's a gap here.
Well, or approved of him. Well, they approved of him when compared to everyone else.
Well, they approved of him not being thrown out of office at 64%. But do you approve of the job he's doing? There were people who went in, voted to retain him while they held their noses because he was a Democrat, because they didn't like any of the other options. The other thing that's very smart that the Democrats did, who was the leading Democrat who was on the ballot in part two? In other words, if part one was get rid of Gavin, who was the leading Democrat in part two?
I saw the name.
There will be silence because it's nobody ever heard of.
Yeah,
right?
It was some real fringe guy.
Exactly. And so instead of some Democrat saying, this is my chance, I'm going to run, and then that way, if Gavin loses, well, here I am. They basically just said it's up or down on the single Democrat. And again, these numbers bear out that if you're a Democrat in California, you voted for Gavin even if you didn't like him because you did not want a Republican.
And it was a YouTuber, if I remember correctly. It was the top Democrat. It was some YouTuber guy. Okay, so one thing I went and looked at numbers-wise, a little wonkish here, okay?
Yes.
So a year a president is inaugurated, the party is in power. Yes, if there are special elections, generally to fill a cabinet member seat or something like that, generally in early part of the year, that usually it's pretty common for the party of the incoming president that year to win those races. But it is – now, granted, we're talking California, which is a different playing field on a lot of levels. But when you get to fall – of a first year of a president, usually the smell is off the rose. And I could find Democrat wins, but I could not find the party where that matched the president's party that had just come into power. I have found wins for those in fall. I cannot find one that this was this overwhelming. And once again, we talked about this. Larry Elder tried to make it a national race. A lot of people will try to say this is a way for you to come back and help out Trump. And the fact is that was a overwhelming loss. Your thoughts on just that trend, because that goes against a lot of things right now.
I go back to your earlier statement. This is California, and I don't think we should make much of it, even within California. There are a lot of Republicans today, including Larry Elder, who say, oh, we'll get them next time because we only lost by, half, figuring that 2022 is going to be a great midterm election for Republicans. I don't think on a statewide level in California. So I caution against anyone taking the California results, given these particular numbers, and trying to make more out of it other than Gavin Newsom, as a smart politician, made it not about his record in a recall election. He made it about the opposition.
Well, and yeah, it's Elder did not help his cause, and that was a major part. I mean, and I think that has to be factored in. This victory here, a lot of it was because really, when you did look at it with both questions, The other option was just a no-go for a lot of people. So we'll take a break. When we come on back, how about the redemption of Dan Quayle? How about that name showing back up again? Jeff Stein joining us, 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. The Matt McNeil Show on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Jeff Stein joining us for his usual Wednesday visit. Woodward's latest book is going to be coming on out here about Trump in the last days. One of the more interesting passages, and once again, if you take it as legit or not, I mean, obviously, I've always said if he's not telling the truth, he's opened himself up for lawsuits. But yet, funny, I don't see lawsuits getting fired in a lot of these cases. What you do get is Pence, who clearly was being pressured by Trump to indeed write new constitutional law, overturn the election results, and throw them out on January 6th and place Trump in power. And Pence, who clearly was not for this, and he was trying to find some way out of this, contacted former Vice President Dan Quayle. And Quayle, to his credit, said, no, 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 you can't do that. You've got to stay with what the Constitution says. You don't really have any say in this at all. You're basically just a mouthpiece there. And so it's interesting to see Dan Quayle, who I think most of it is forgotten about, come back and finding out that he actually played a very important role, I think, with Pence in what his trajectory was on January 6th.
Isn't it interesting that with all the other stuff in the Woodward book, this is getting forgotten? In most books that would come out, this would be front and center, but all the other stuff about, you know, generals calling China to say, don't worry, we'll make sure he doesn't bomb you. You know, I mean, that changes everything. But obviously, Pence being an Indiana politician about 12 years younger than Quayle, so they had that ongoing relationship. But when you've got, and I don't mean this any more disrespectfully than it's going to sound, when you're asking Dan Quayle for advice, oh, goodness, aren't we in a situation? But as you know, the quote that we see from Quayle is, you have no flexibility on this. None. Zero. Forget it. Put it away.
Yes.
I mean, you could not be clearer or not. And I think Trump has admitted he was pressuring Pence at every turn. Something else that's in the Woodward and Costa book where Trump says to Pence, I'm not going to be your friend anymore if you don't do this. Are we 13-year-old girls at this point?
Well, apparently they were. And this was, I mean, come on, there's a level of coordination here, which is just bizarre. I will say, and also should be mentioned, well, Cheney's gone. He passed away. But I got to imagine if Pence had gone talk to Cheney, I got to imagine Cheney himself as well would have said, no, you can't do that. I don't think Cheney, if you look at Liz Cheney, I don't think that her father was that far away from it, and I don't think he would have wanted any part of what Trump was up to.
Dick Cheney's still with us, by the way.
Oh, yes.
But you're right, and the reason why the Pence part is important is because he's the last Republican vice president who had to preside over certification of his own defeat. And so there was a direct parallel there. Much worse situation, obviously, was poor Al Gore, because he was the one that was the top on the ballot and had to certify.
Al Gore's gone now, too, so it's all these people, right? I'm just talking to – they're all dead now, right?
Are you a QAnon conspiracy theorist with all these people are dead? Is that where we're going with this
show? I think I was thinking of HW. Because I can tell you right now, it is interesting. I've thought about the fact that he went back to Dan Quayle. And the reality is that isn't what I think about that span. When you go back that far, is that how much that Republican Party has changed in that 30 years?
Well, and the thing is, Dan Quayle had a very distinguished career until he learned how to spell. And until he tried to take on Lloyd Benson in a debate.
No, there's when he got into trouble. But when he took on Benson and he got clobbered.
That, you know, unfortunately, there are certain incidents that you just can't crawl out of the hole, and that was one of them.
Well, unless you said Dick Cheney's gone. So there you go. Jeff Stein.
He's on vacation. He's gone. He's out of town.
He's in Wyoming. That's all gone. Spotlight this. We'll put the Iowa Politics Report up. Hour two is up next.